Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I came to London, England this week for a wonderful event, the Taste of February Festival. And boy, they've done it right. It's freezing, just like February. It's really remarkable, the kind of the clammy cold, the pesky rain. It's a marvelous thing they've put on here. However, you know, despite Maggie Thatcher's best efforts, the unions are still pretty strong here. How strong? Well, I understand the trees are going on strike this week because it's that cold, ladies and gentlemen. Now, some more serious matters at hand. This Benghazi thing has escaped from its box at Fox News and is now creeping all over the American media. And I'm sure you've been following it. Why would I be sure of that? The kerfuffle concerns, or the kerfuffle, the attack on the U.S. supposedly consulate or mission in Benghazi, Libya, on September 11th, oddly enough, of last year, in which four people, including the American ambassador, died. And the administration's talking points about it resolutely refused to acknowledge the possibility that terrorism was involved. They originally attributed the whole nutty affair to demonstrators angry at an anti-Muslim videotape. And that changed over days. Now, the most interesting and intriguing version, unless you just, well, the Republican version is, we're going to hammer at this because Hillary Clinton is at the top of the State Department. The State Department was the agency that changed the talking points that were put out by the CIA or were suggested by the CIA. And Hillary Clinton's running for president next time around. So why not? Let's go. That's one possibility. A more subtle possibility was suggested by a writer in the Washington Post on Friday that what seems like either cover-up or dithering is, in fact, instead, bureaucratic knife-fighting. Because what that place in Benghazi was, in fact, was not a consulate or was a de minimis consulate. What it really was a CIA outpost. The vast majority of the employees in that particular location were working for the company. And so there's a lot riding on the CIA's involvement, and the CIA and State Department are not always the best of friends. Now, that point of view was given weird impetus this morning on one of the Sunday Yak shows when Daryl Issa, you may find his voice, if not his name, familiar. He's the guy who used to say, "Step away from the vehicle." He owned the company that made the car alarm that said, "Step away from the vehicle." And now he's the chairman of the committee investigating Benghazi. Ain't life grand? He went on one of the Sunday Yak shows, I say, and explained his interpretation of what had happened as the talking points were changed. We know there are now 12 different versions of the talking points, I think, that were unearthed by ABC News. And his version is interesting. He said, I think it was on Meet the Press, that the CIA came out with these talking points which mentioned Islamic extremists and mentioned, I think, the name of a couple of groups. And over time, those as various iterations of the talking points were scrubbed, those references were removed. And his version was, so the CIA, the first set of talking points the CIA presented were the facts. But they were changed after pushback from the State Department. And the host of the program acted as if this was the most bizarre scenario he'd ever heard. Apparently, he'd never heard of Dick Cheney and the massaging of the intelligence that led to the war in Iraq. But hey, that's network television. Hello, welcome to the show.
On the phone and cool and sexy, getting that postcard from Brazil. Oh, but now I'm back here back home. All she'll want to give is the chill. She said, when you get back, we're gonna cha-cha all night long. But she lied. She said, when you get back, we're gonna sing a different song. But she lied. I flew in on the red eye. I put a quarter in the phone. And boy, said leave a message, 'cause there ain't nobody home. And I live in a hotel, wondering where she's at. You know the girl giving me a third degree. And anyway, it's at no. When you get back, we're gonna cha-cha all night long. But she lied. She said, when you get back, we're gonna sing a different song.
From Leicester Square in London, where the slogan on the outdoor cafes says, "Al fresco like nowhere else." I would suggest it's exactly like Northern Wales. From there, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
Inspector General.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
News of the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen. On a related subject to what we were talking about at the top of the show, the watchdog who tracks the billions of taxpayer dollars spent to rebuild Afghanistan. He says officials of our government have tried to silence him because they think he's embarrassing the White House and Afghan President Hamid Karzai. You can embarrass him by pointing out the waste and fraud. John Sopko, the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, the SIGAR, that's what it spells, S-I-G-A-R, used a speech this week to blame and blast government bureaucrats who have told him to stop publicizing audits which detail case after case of waste and corruption and mismanagement in the rebuilding efforts in Afghanistan. Some government officials have even complained that they aren't allowed to pre-screen or edit his reports, he said. Quote, since my appointment by the president last summer, I've been surprised to learn how many people both in and out of the government do not understand the role of an independent inspector general. Maybe it's not a problem of understanding. The Pentagon did not address his remarks about pre-screening. Said, we value inputs from independent oversight. They wrote that press release with a straight face. Even so, he slammed the government for what he called a hostile attitude towards his work. I've been criticized by some bureaucrats for not pre-clearing my press releases with them, for not letting them edit the titles of my audits, for talking too much to Congress, for talking too much to the press, basically for not being a team player and undermining our country's mission in Afghanistan. Many in our government, even some surprisingly senior officials you think would know better, seem to believe an inspector general should be their partner, or more correctly, their silent partner. In their opinion, my report should be slipped in a sealed envelope in the dead of night under the door, never to see the light of day, because they could embarrass the administration or President Karzai. Unquote, the U.S. Inspector General, Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, the SIGAR. Oversight of airport repair stations, check this, ladies and gentlemen, by U.S. aviation regulators is marred by inspectors who haven't been trained and a system that can't identify the areas of highest risk. Independent repair shops are used increasingly by airlines trying to cut costs. That's right, they don't employ their own mechanics anymore. They outsource the work. Fly now. They couldn't account, these independent repair shops, for tools, document the training of their mechanics, and prove that the work had been done properly, according to the Transportation Department's Inspector General. It's the latest report by government auditors to raise questions about how the FAA oversees repair shops in the U.S. and other nations. Yes, they send the planes abroad to be fixed. Independent Inspector General Calvin Scovell and his predecessor raised similar issues way back in 2003 and 2008. And here we are again. FAA's oversight of foreign and domestic repair stations lacks the rigor needed to identify deficiencies and verify that they've been addressed, he says in his report. The FAA agreed with 9 recommendations issued by the Inspector General and said, it's making improvements. Fly now. The FAA is taking action to rectify performance gaps, says H. Clayton Fauci, the director of the agency's audit office. The IG report said the FAA wasn't going far enough and urged the agency to make additional changes. More than 4,800 aircraft repair stations are used by U.S. carriers. Those shops perform everything from engine overhauls to complete teardowns of airplanes. Airline spending on repairs outside their own maintenance facilities has grown threefold, according to the report. Because they got to save money? Because you don't want to pay for your bag to go, and you don't want to pay for your coffee? Deadline Washington, health workers failed to check up on almost a third of veterans at risk for suicide, raising serious questions about the VA's mental health care. The VA Inspector General said that 30% high-risk mental health cases they reviewed did not receive all the follow-ups promised by the department. Among lower-risk patients, 28% did not receive the promised checkups. Because we support our troops. News of the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. News of the godly. It's not just, you know, it's not just religions. Folks, by the way, there's a brewing child sex abuse scandal here in the United Kingdom involving music schools. I knew there was something wrong with those piano lessons. But now, back to News of the Godly. Dateline Kampala. That's right, capital of Uganda. You get the $5. A popular Ugandan priest has been ostracized from the Catholic Church after exposing what he calls an open secret, i.e. the rampant sexual abuse of children by clergy members. Yes, we have sent that to Africa. Earlier this year, Ghanaian cardinal and one-time papal candidate Peter Turkson raised eyebrows when he told CNN the international clergy sex abuse scandal couldn't happen in Africa because, quote, African traditional systems kind of protect the population against this tendency, and in Africa, quote, homosexuality is not countenanced in our society, unquote. But Anthony Musaala, a gospel music star known as the Dancing Priest, has been publicizing sex abuse among clergy in his native Uganda. In doing so, he's forcing his country's Catholic Church to confront an ugly epidemic it says doesn't exist. Musaala is paying a heavy price. In March, he was suspended indefinitely by the Archbishop of Kampala, to whom he'd written about priests who sexually abused children, also fathered children and kept secret wives. Musaala also called for a debate on whether priests should be allowed to marry. What does that have to do with it? According to the archbishop who suspended him, Musaala damaged the good morals of Catholic believers and further expressed a wrong teaching against the Catholic Church's teaching. He says he was one of many boys who were sexually abused by Catholic brothers at a church-run boarding school, one of the finest in the country. He says what happened to him is by no means unusual. Wherever you go, people know about this, he told the L.A. Times. The L.A. Times? They're still... It's like an open secret, he said. People know. Nothing is ever done. He also believes it's important to distinguish between homosexuality and same-sex clergy sex abuse. Quote, I'm not a victim of homosexuality. I'm a victim of child sex abuse. The archbishop eventually admitted that clergy sex abuse is a problem in Uganda, apologized to victims, and ordered an internal inquiry. Catholics should not get scared about what Father Musaala said, said the archbishop, because God will help us overcome it. He also said the findings of the abuse inquiry will not be made public, and the church will deal with the matter internally. What's the learning curve like over there? They tried that, didn't they? Over here? Worked? How did that work? The leak of the week, ladies and gentlemen, comes from Calgary, Alberta. Enbridge Incorporated, Canada's largest pipeline operator, said it had restarted a 110,000 barrel per day North Dakota pipeline after it was shut earlier this week following a discovery of the second oil leak in less than a week. It's the leaks of the week. Graham White, a spokesman for the company, said in an email the line was restarted. Workers carrying out integrity tests on the line. Yes, they have integrity tests for pipelines, not for sorry. I was getting cynical there for a moment. Integrity tests on the line had found contaminated soil. The company estimates that 2 barrels of crude leaked from the line. So fill her up. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. The former Guatemalan dictator Efrain Rios Monti was convicted of genocide this week after a court found him guilty of crimes against humanity for his role in the slaughter of 1,771 Mayan Ixils in the 1980s. He was sentenced to 80 years in prison. He won't serve out his term. It's the first time a former head of state has been found guilty of genocide in his own country. That's right, not Saddam Hussein. We are convinced that the Ixil suffered constitute the crime of genocide, said the judge, adding that Rios Monti had knowledge of what was happening and did nothing to stop it. By the way, he was our friend. The trial is the first time a former head of government has been held to account in Guatemala for the abuses carried out during the 36-year conflict that killed an estimated 200,000 people and led to 45,000 other, quote, disappearances. The vast majority of the victims were members of indigenous groups that at one time made up about half of the population. That from The Guardian. This from The Telegraph, both newspapers in London. Added to my continuing amazement about who got reparations in the wake of slavery. the slavers. Samantha Cameron, the wife of British Prime Minister David Cameron, has an ancestor who received millions of dollars, actually pounds here, as compensation from the government when the slave trade was abolished. No, he wasn't a slave. Researchers have discovered that one of her kinsmen was a slave owner who received the equivalent of millions of pounds in compensation. The Reverend William Jolliffe of Upper Tilgate, near Crawley, was an entrepreneur whose company was responsible for the construction of Waterloo Bridge and the New London Bridge. He gave it all up for the church and became a vicar. However, before he embraced the church, he became a beneficiary of slave ownership through complicated legal transactions, which all claims due to a failed firm were transferred to him. He received about $5 million in today's money for the slaves that company held. Jolliffe's son was the first Baronet Hilton, not spelled the same way. Jolliffe was among many wealthy families, including viscounts, baronets, MPs, and vicars, who received generous British government payouts after the 1833 Act of Parliament, which emancipated slaves following the abolition of slavery almost 30 years earlier. They abolished it, then they emancipated them. You know, wait 30 years. The discovery about Mrs. Cameron's ancestor was made by researchers examining the records of the Slavery Compensation Commission. The amount of money available to the compensation fund reflects how much influence the elite who owned slaves had on the government, says Dr. Nick Draper from University College London, who spent 3 years working on the records. So, reparations for the slave owners, ladies and gentlemen. News from outside the bubble. Copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And now, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah, and then this.
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Back to our issue with people beginning their sentences. Their answers to questions with the word so, as if they're not concluding anything. They're starting something. Well, they sure have started something with me. And maybe with you, too. From BBC's Radio 4, an interview with a politician on the troublesome issue of immigration. He begins both of his answers with the all-important word, so. So join us, won't you, as we enjoy the so's of the week.
Mr. Webb, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's the problem here, that they're foreigners or that they don't live in this country?
So the problem is that we have a system that was invented after the Second World War.
And some would wonder if that's discriminatory.
So the transitional arrangements apply wherever you've come from.
Makes him sound smart. Makes him sound smarter than a politician. So he says so. So. Ladies and gentlemen, the new F-bomb. Foreclosure. A federal judge this week made a rare move, took off his robes and he stopped the foreclosure auction of a woman's house in Aurora, Colorado, in a case that squarely takes on the constitutionality of Colorado's foreclosure laws. Judge William Martinez issued a preliminary injunction against the sale of Lisa K. Brumfield's house, which had been scheduled for Wednesday, until it can decide whether parts of state law are unfair to homeowners facing the loss of their house. The issue is a provision in Colorado state law that allows lawyers to assert that their client, like a bank, has the right to foreclose on a property, even though they may not have the original mortgage paperwork to prove it. It's the trust the bank law. What makes the case compelling is not just that a federal judge is tackling a state law, but that the plaintiff in the case is a part-time saleswoman who took on the battle without a lawyer and has gotten up to the federal judge level. The interesting wrinkle, since the judge delivered his order, is that the bank in question, I believe it's U.S. Bank, announced at the end of the week that they're going to drop the move to foreclose on her, which would make the federal case moot, after which certain legal authorities have pointed out the bank could refile for foreclosure and make her start the process all over again. We'll see if that happens. Meanwhile, Bank of America and Wells Fargo violated the terms of that nationwide settlement that the administration proudly reached a year ago over mortgage foreclosure practices. That's according to New York's Attorney General, who signed on to that settlement. Second thought, signer's remorse, or just eager for some FaceTime? The two banks have failed to comply with standards established for processing homeowners' loan modification applications, said Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. He said he plans to sue the banks unless a committee set up to monitor the terms of the settlement takes action. So far, it's a press release. Wells Fargo and Bank of America have flagrantly violated their obligations under the settlement, he told a news conference. So it wasn't a press release, it was a statement. Schneiderman said delays by the banks in processing modifications have caused New Yorkers to incur fees and fall further behind in payments, putting them at even greater risk of losing their homes. Like the banks wouldn't want that. Bank of America said in a statement, we provided relief for more than 10,000 New York homeowners through the settlement, totaling more than $1 billion. It said it will work quickly to address the customer complaints, Schneiderman identified. We'll watch for that. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The City of Los Angeles Department of Public Works is under fire for producing a controversial video depicting the Asian community in a derogatory way with taxpayer money. The video, shot at the Japanese garden at a water reclamation plant in Van Nuys, showed a non-Asian man dressed as a geisha girl who talked with a mock Japanese accent to promote the water park. It was apparently meant to teach viewers about recycled water, which is what they use at the Japanese garden. But the head of the Japanese American National Museum complained, "It's just awful. It's absolutely offensive. I find it personally offensive and in poor taste." Department of Public Works funds that project. The video has been taken down from YouTube, and Cora Jackson Fawcett, a spokeswoman for the Department of Public Works, admitted the video was in bad taste. We apologize profusely that we missed the mark totally. We made a mistake. We're extremely sorry. It was an attempt at humor that failed. If the Department of Public Works can't get humor right, who can? Mainland China online video portal issued a public apology to Muslims for an offensive cartoon series. Muslims described the series Cher, Zhang, and Angel as blasphemous, as it represented the image of Allah. The setting is heaven, and the characters consist of religious and mythological figures such as Allah, Jesus Christ, Buddha, and the Jade Emperor. No, not the Jade Emperor! It aired only 2 of 13 episodes before it was stopped after the Islamic groups complained. The TV outlet LETV apologized and dropped the series. The author of the cartoon also apologized. And I apologize for reading the story. So the folks at LEGO, who have a lot to apologize for, ask me sometime. Don't have time on the radio to tell that story. Believe me. Anyway, the folks at LEGO have apologized for a sticker which some parents have found offensive. The sticker in question features a LEGO construction worker saying, "Hey, babe," while waving to the object of his attention or affection. The father of two boys said that LEGO is essentially promoting sexual harassment. Supporters took their case to Amazon, where a host of negative reviews started popping up. The situation soon caught the eye of the folks at LEGO. Senior Director Charlotte Simonson apologized for the offensive sticker. She said the company was responsible for making the product, lost its license to manufacture the item in 2010. "To communicate the LEGO experience to children, we typically use humor, and we're sorry that you were unhappy with the way a minifigure was portrayed here," said the statement. If LEGO can't get humor right, try the Department of Public Works. Dayline Dallas, Texas-based power company Atmos Energy apologized for overcharging 39,000 customers for 10 times the amount of their bill. Just a little oops. Jennifer Ryan, spokeswoman for the Dallas company, said the vendor it uses to handle bills automatically deducted from customers' checking accounts or credit cards discovered that 39,000 customers in 8 states had been overcharged 10 times their normal bills. So as we found out about it, our guys started working, the spokeswoman said. We've been calling people and making reimbursements. People in our public relations office were affected as well because we're all customers. We just sincerely apologize. That's right, we use electricity too. Dateline Jerusalem, Israel apologized to Egypt for evicting 3 Egyptian diplomats from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. The diplomats were part of a group of Egyptians who were removed from the church during Saturday night mass. Isn't that the show Lauren Michaels produces? In advance of Easter Sunday, according to the Coptic calendar, the group was led by Egypt's deputy ambassador to Israel. Deputy Foreign Minister Ze'ev Elkin offered the verbal apology on Thursday, a day after Israel's ambassador to Cairo was summoned by the Egyptian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Dateline North Vancouver, Canada, Councillor Rod Clark has publicly apologized for using a racial slur during a council debate. Last Monday, he was discussing the difficult relationship the city council has with Port Metro Vancouver when Clark said the city was being, quote, Jewed down by the port, unquote. I used a racial stereotype when describing the actions of Port Metro Vancouver, Clark said in an email to local media. I deeply regret the reference, which was made in the heat of the moment. It was a very bad mistake. I offer a heartfelt and profound apology to any and all who were offended by my words, he said. When forced by the mayor to retract the statement at the meeting, he said it had, quote, no religious overtones, unquote. Operators of a Missouri movie theater apologized this week for a stunt in which an actor dressed in black, wearing body armor, and carrying a fake rifle walked into the movie theater. What could go wrong with that stunt? Hey, if a movie theater can't get humor right, try Lego. The stunt occurred during a promotion for the movie Iron Man 3 last weekend at the Goodrich Capital 8 Theaters in Jefferson City. Actors appeared at the theater, including some dressed as officers and one as Iron Man. Another actor was wearing assault gear and carrying a rifle. Some moviegoers were frightened and called 911, recalling the shooting at a Colorado theater last July. Management apologized on the theater's Facebook page, saying it was meant to be part of the entertainment. They added that similar dress-up promotions have occurred at past movies. We apologize and are sympathetic to those who felt they were in harm's way with our character promotion for Iron Man 3. We didn't clearly tell our customers, and some people didn't realize it was for entertainment purposes only. The regional manager for the theater chain was not immediately available for comment. Police also were upset. But that's their job. Swiss federal president Uli Maurer has apologized for his controversial message on Holocaust Remembrance Day at the end of January. Maurer told Jewish representatives this week it had not been his intention to hush up the weaknesses and mistakes of Swiss Second World War policy. Those are his words. Swiss Jewish organizations had criticized the federal president for his published remarks on Holocaust Remembrance Day back on January 27th. He had written, in the dark days of the Second World War, Switzerland had remained a land of freedom and rule of law. It had offered refuge to many persecuted and threatened people. Jewish groups said at the time he neglected to mention all the refugees turned away by Switzerland who faced certain death. I would just like to apologize for leaving that aspect out, Maurer said. Delegates applauded the president's words at the meeting. He had already responded to the criticism in February, saying Holocaust Remembrance Day had not been the right time to discuss Switzerland's wartime role. Neil Ferguson, professor at Harvard, during a period of question and answer session at a conference in California, made comments about John Maynard Keynes that were as stupid as they were insensitive. This is Ferguson. I'm quoting. I've been asked to comment on Keynes' famous observation, in the long run, we're all dead. The point I'd made in my presentation was that in the long run, our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren are alive. But I should not have suggested, in an off-the-cuff response, that Keynes was indifferent to the long run because he had no children, nor that he had no children because he was gay. That was doubly stupid, he says. First, it is obvious that people who do not have children also care about future generations. Second, I had forgotten that Keynes' wife, Lydia, miscarried. My colleagues, students, and friends, straight and gay, have every right to be disappointed in me, as I am in myself. To them and to everyone who heard my remarks at the conference, or has heard them since, I deeply and unreservedly apologize, Neil Ferguson. Marine Corps Commandant Commandant, sorry, apologized to Congress this week for the shameful behavior of my Marines as the Pentagon released new statistics outlining the military's growing sexual assault problem. And the Internal Revenue Service has apologized for improperly subjecting conservative political groups to extra scrutiny. In the 2012 campaign season, groups applying for tax-exempt status with the words Tea Party or Patriot in their names were singled out for scrutiny, and the agency asked some for donor lists in violation of its own policy. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is LeShow, and one more apology of the week. Sorry about that. Forgot it. Left it in the bin. Here is Howard Kurtz, the media critic of CNN, on his CNN media criticism show, responding to media criticism of Howard Kurtz.
Here's what happened. Here is why I did what I did and why it was clearly wrongly handled by me. On Monday, I read the Sports Illustrated article by Jason Collins, the first pro male team athlete to come out publicly as gay. I read it too fast and carelessly missed that Jason Collins said he was engaged previously to a woman, and then wrote and commented that he was wrong to keep that from readers when, in fact, I was the one who was wrong.
One more thing. I mean, this is not a ritual for me where you just come on camera and you say you're sorry and you hope to move on. I am truly sorry about what happened. I believe deeply in good journalism and fair journalism, and I am determined to learn from this episode and minimize the chances of anything like this happening again.
Okay, but I'd like to see some of your rituals. All right, that's a personal request for me. Ladies and gentlemen, news of AFAC! They fired the guy who did that. Got a new voice for AFAC! He's good. A high court in Pakistan, which, as you may have heard, had a big election this weekend. Congratulations to Nawaz Sharif. Anyway, a high court in Pakistan has found the United States drone strikes carried out in Pakistan by the CIA are, this is the Pakistan courts, words, war crimes. which are absolutely illegal, that's a quote, and, quote, a blatant violation of Pakistan's state sovereignty. It's in a lawsuit filed by the Foundation for Fundamental Rights, a legal charity in Islamabad, which sued the Pakistani government for failing to protect its own citizens from the U.S. drone strikes. It was filed on behalf of victims of a drone strike that occurred in northwest Waziristan and killed more than 50 people. Several tribal elders, said the filing petition, were gathered to resolve a chromite mine dispute among two sub-tribes. The said dispute had been lingering for a while, which was a threat to public peace and might have given rise to a long feud between tribes. At 11 in the morning, the gathering of the Jirga, which is a little tribal assembly, was targeted in a clandestine manner by the drones. It was reported widely in the media that those killed were participants in the Jirga. Tribal leaders condemned the brutal extrajudicial killing of elders. That's in the filing. The decision by Chief Justice Dosi Mohammed Khan of the Pakistan of the Peshawar High Court concludes that the strikes being carried out in the tribal areas are a blatant violation of basic human rights and are against the UN Charter, and they are war crimes, unquote. The judge. There go the judge. Meanwhile, across the border, the United States wants to keep troops at 9 bases across Afghanistan. Who says that? Not the United States. President Karzai of Afghanistan. That's a larger number than expected, given Washington's scaled-back ambitions, supposedly. Karzai has often been a fierce critic of the foreign forces, was surprisingly conciliatory about the prospect of a long-term U.S. presence. Keeping U.S. soldiers on the ground was in Afghan interests, he now says, as long as soldiers came with support for the Afghan government and economy. Quote, we can agree to give them the bases. The condition is that they bring peace and security and take action quickly and helping the economy of Afghanistan. So, troops, spend money. Buy those Afghan jeans, won't you? The uneasy allies are currently thrashing out a bilateral security agreement. President Karzai may have annoyed American officials by revealing details about strategic planning on future commitments to Afghanistan that have been kept under tight wraps, like we're leaving. President Karzai also says he expects that the CIA will continue dropping off stacks of cash at his office. That's in a meeting he had with the CIA station chief last week after the New York Times, among others, reported that the CIA for years had been sending, well, it was the same basic model for success we had in Iraq. Jet planes full of loot over to him. The CIA money, Karzai told reporters, was, quote, an easy source of petty cash. And who wouldn't want that, really? Some of it was used to pay off members of the political elite, a group dominated by warlords. I think that's what this country needs, frankly, ladies and gentlemen. We've had it with the politicians. Let's go with the warlords for a while. We're paying them anyway. The use of the CIA cash for payoffs has prompted criticism from many Afghans and some Americans and European officials who complain the agency financed what is essentially a presidential slush fund. This undercuts the pillar of American strategy, building a clean and credible Afghan government. Yeah, I guess. Instead, corruption at the highest level seems only to have worsened, according to the New York Times. But Karzai sought to dampen the furor over the payments, describing them as one facet of the billions of dollars in aid Afghanistan receives every year. This is nothing unusual, he said. It helps pay rent for various officials. Maybe they're hiking the Afghanistan trail. Even pays for scholarships. See, how do you feel now? Now how do you feel? Now how much would you pay? Now, here's how that story sounds over there.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where new voices always sound the same. From the presidential palace in downtown Kabul, now with a currency wheelbarrow entrance, I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Check and Cash, the payoff brothers. Welcome to another edition of Karzai Talk. Today's program comes to you with the assistance of 13 suitcases full of unmarked bills, just proving that cash contributions can be tax-deductible.
Especially with our tax department.
Wait, we have a tax department?
So, this weekend, our neighbors next door in Pakistan just had their latest exercise in democracy.
Mm. You mean the elections?
I meant the killings.
Big debate in Pakistan over how to count.
The votes?
No, the bodies. No, we kid the Pakistanis because we love them.
Mm-hmm. Like brothers.
Mm, more like sisters.
No. Meaning?
We'd like to keep them at home with a burqa over their heads. Hello, you're on Cars I Talk.
Hi, I'm, Jim, long-time covert operative, first-time caller.
Ah, always good to hear from our friends in the shadows. What can we do for you?
Well, we're here at the wheelbarrow entrance with today's shipment of peanuts, and the entrance seems to be locked.
Oh, well, it's Sunday, and public radio facilities are always understaffed on Sundays. Can the peanuts wait until tomorrow?
There might be some spillage.
Oh, my head's starting to ache from all the cold you guys are talking.
Oh, maybe you've got a head cold.
But if it's cash you're delivering, I could step outside and receive it.
Well, that sounds like a plan.
Yes, a plan for letting my brother go buy a new riding lawnmower.
It greens up our image, dear brother. Uh-huh. The new ones get much better mileage.
Well, look, guys, the peanuts are burning a hole in my pocket. Can you figure out what I should do before I blow my cover standing in this phone booth?
Oh, that's the last thing you want to blow in a phone booth.
We'll have to see if the sensor lets that go by. Uh-oh. Caller,
yes.
Since the shipment is just for the use of aid to underprivileged government officials, why don't you just deposit it at the Ministry of Underprivileged Government Officials?
Oh, there is such a place?
Yes. It's his house.
Thanks for the call. I hope he knows we weren't kidding about the last part.
No, people who listen regularly know we're not kidding about any of it. If we were kidding, it would be funny. Hello, welcome to Cars I Talk.
Hello, this is General Maelstrom calling from Kandahar.
General, lovely to hear from you. You have a question for my brother and me?
As a matter of fact, I do, sir.
Good.
I had the distinct impression that our conversations about bases being kept in country after the American withdrawal were to be kept confidential until after
the American withdrawal?
Yes, sir. Exactly, sir. Yet the president, Karzai, seems to have breached that confidentiality by
not being confidential about it?
Yes, sir.
Well, General, as you know, we are walking a fine line here between not wanting to let the enemy know that you're leaving and, on the other hand, reassuring the anti-foreign element of our population that you are leaving.
That's a big part of our population, as you probably know, sir.
Yes, sir.
In fact, that's the whole of our population. We're more anti-foreign than the southern half of Texas.
And last time I looked, all of Texas is the southern half.
excuse me, isn't that the reverse of the same joke you just did?
General, if I wanted our listeners to know all of our secrets,
yes, sir,
I'd tell them that all the Toyotas I sell are pre-owned.
You're not going to do that.
Well, sir, I just know that it's a bit of a political problem for my superiors back home for it to become public knowledge that we're going to keep 9 bases over here after we leave.
Well, in fairness, General, it's a political problem for your people back home for anything to become public knowledge.
That's true enough, sir.
Thanks for the call.
We had help today from the Convergence Foundation, helping public radio become more like regular radio.
Legal services for Cars I Talk from the law firm of Ketchum and Newcomb. I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. Join us again next time for another edition of Cars I Talk. This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Addy is with me here, Addy the Atom. How are you feeling, Addy?
I'm rubbing two muons together to stay warm.
Two muons. Excellent work. After a series of blunders, miscalculations, and unresolved problems, Tokyo Electric Power Company has adopted a new strategy to avoid a total collapse of its system for handling radioactive water at the crippled nuclear plant.
Partial collapse would be good.
Partial collapse would be good. TEPCO is running out of storage space for water used in the nonstop process of cooling the melted and spent fuel at the Fuuk No. 1 plant. Exacerbating the storage problem is the groundwater that keeps flowing into the plant's buildings. The company has dug 12 wells to the west of the reactor buildings where it plans to pump up groundwater before it can enter the facilities and become contaminated. We would like to release that water into the ocean if we can gain the understanding of the relevant officials, says a TEPCO official. Maybe that water won't be as radiated as the water they have been releasing into the ocean.
It's dilution. It's not pollution, it's dilution.
Got it. The cover of the makeshift canopy covering that badly damaged reactor building will be demolished and replaced, according to TEPCO, in order to remove rubble and radioactive material. It announced the plan this week. It will take about 4 years to complete a new cover for the reactor building before removing fuel rods from the reactor's pool.
Doing it right takes time.
And doing it wrong does, too, apparently. Although the amount of radioactive substances released from the reactor into the air will increase between the time the current cover is removed and the new one is installed, TEPCO said it will not likely have a significant impact on the exposure of people and things.
Just a taste.
Just a taste. Palisades Nuclear Power Plant in southwestern Michigan was taken offline last week after operators discovered a leak from a water tank. Although the tank has leaked twice in less than a year, officials say with me, there's no immediate risk. There is no impact on the health and safety of plant employees or the public, said a spokeswoman.
Don't make fun.
All right, then. 79 gallons of very slightly radioactive water from a leaky tank at Palisades spilled into Lake Michigan, according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. There's no risk to human health because it was, Addy?
Diluted?
Diluted. Diluted, not diluted.
Sorry.
The plant is in Covert Township. Somebody will explain that to me, I'm sure, in the email. Covert Township, best place to build a nuclear plant, don't you think? Unless you're talking about Millstone, the nuclear plant in Hartford, Connecticut. Plant so nice, they called it Millstone. It has asked federal regulators for permission to use warmer water after being forced to shut last summer because the water of Long Island Sound got too hot. Millstone Power Station asked to use water at 80 degrees. And you know what they use the water for?
Cooling.
That's right. Can we use warmer water for cooling this year, please? One of the units was forced to shut for nearly 2 weeks last August because water was warmer than the 75-degree limit the first time it had happened in the United States. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued an emergency license amendment.
I didn't know they could do that. They should do that all the time.
Then it wouldn't be an emergency.
Sure. It's all an emergency.
And security workers at Farley Nuclear Plant in Alabama cheated on their training exams in 2010 and 2011, according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Southern Nuclear Operating Company, which operates the plant, avoided civil fines by negotiating a settlement with federal regulators. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you wish when you violated federal regulations you could just negotiate a fine? You can.
That's right. Just open a nuclear power plant.
Clean, safe, cheap. Too safe to regulate. Our friend, the atom. And from the Let Us Try department, that weird barge gate that sits in the middle of the more than billion-dollar space-age, state-of-the-art wall across the mouth of the Gulf of Mexico, preventing water from getting into New Orleans. That tricky gate, which involves moving a barge into place, well, they tested again this week, and it almost worked. It didn't have parts failures this time, according to Bob Marshall of The Lens in New Orleans. But it had an oil leak. Let us try. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at harryshearer.com. And at a URL that's too long for me to say on the air, KCRW News. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast from iTunes, Sideshow Network, and KCRW.com. And it would be just like a barge gate working as hurricane season approaches in New Orleans. If you would agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Adrian Bodders here at Global Radio in London for help with today's broadcast. She needed all the help he could get. Thank you. The email address for this broadcast, playlist of the music heard here on, and special offers on great stuff, all available at harryshearer.com. Hey, come join me on Twitter at the Harry Shearer. I'm going to put on about 85 pounds of clothing and participate in the Taste of February Festival. I'll see you next week. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions. But I'll tell you more in a moment. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates on the Change is Hard Radio Network.